Hello, hello, Michael.
Hello, hello.
How are you?
All present and accounted for.
Yes. Hello, everybody.
So if you're new to this, there's two views you have optional. There's what's called speaker view, where you'll see a frighteningly large version of my head. And then there's also gallery view, which is, it's really interesting. It's kind of like Hollywood Squares, if you remember that show, or Tic-Tac-Toe, but bigger. And at the moment, we've got, it looks like people in airports, somebody driving a car. it's kind of fun. And then there's multiple screens as well. So this is the same technology that we use for our master classes during the academy. And it kind of lets you see each other, which once you know each other is even more fun. At this point, it's more of a novelty act. It's like just kind of sitting in the airport and people watching and kind of go, I wonder what their life is like when they're not on the call. I wanted to, first off, thank you for coming. And if you're not on live, to thank you for listening. I've actually never done anything that got this kind of response. We had over 1,000 people sign up and had to actually stop the direct signups because we knew that we wouldn't be able to get everybody involved. And I wanted to talk a little bit about, here's how it's going to go all 5 days. It will probably get smoother and more dynamic, but maybe not as we go through the 5 days. And I'm going to talk a little bit about transformative coaching, why I think this is an important modality in the world of personal professional change and development. I'm going to talk about the topic for each day. The theme today is insight, and I'll be talking quite a lot about that. I'm going to do some coaching. Thank you to all of you. We've gotten a number of people who've already written in requesting coaching during the calls, and I'll choose a couple of people on each call, depending on how time works, and do some what we in the trade call laser coaching, which just means we don't have enough time to do it properly, but we'll see what we can do. And then also take some questions, because there are inevitably questions during these things. So that's the rough frame. And I thought that I'd kick it off by talking a little bit for me about the difference between transformative coaching, which is what I call this thing that we teach at Supercoach Academy that we do, and different modalities of difference making. Because essentially, if you're a coach, if you're a therapist, if you're a 3P practitioner, you are in the difference making profession. There's a wonderful line by a man named Lyndon Duke, who studied the linguistics of suicide. He collected over 100, I think it was 150 initially, and then it grew and grew, suicide notes, and looked for language within the suicide notes that could give an indication of somebody's state of mind ahead of time to help prevention. And he talked about difference making, and he talked about meaning. And he said the meaning of something is the difference that it makes. If it doesn't make much difference, it's not very meaningful. If it makes a huge difference, it's hugely meaningful. And in the work I've been doing for 26 years, the biggest differences, the most hugely meaningful shifts that I've seen people make have come about through an understanding of what life really is, who we really are as human beings, and how it works. And the reason that I like the word transformative is because literally the form of our lives starts to change. So it's not just, well, my life says it is, but I'm doing a little better. My life says it is, or I'm doing a lot better. It's as we change, the world around us changes with us. It transforms. We become almost at times unrecognizable to ourselves. We're like, but I'm shy. How could I be doing this? But I lack confidence. How could I be doing this? But I'm not good at this. Why am I good at this? And we start to experience a level of our potential that's way beyond what we were even striving for. Now, as coaches, the reason I like coaching as a modality for this is because people come to coaches to get more out of themselves and their lives. They don't, generally speaking, hire a coach because they're messed up and they'd like to be less messed up. Now, sometimes they are messed up and it would be great if they were less messed up, but that's not usually why they come. They come because at some level, they recognize that if they were better, life would be easier. If they could show up at their best more of the time, they would do better. And there's something that they are up to in the world or would like to be up to in the world that they think a coach can help push them over the top. And so coaching is a profession. That's what it's about. It's about getting more out of yourself than you can get out of yourself. Right? I was talking to Cheryl Richardson the other day, who's sort of the, she'd kill me if I called her the grandmother of the coaching profession. Let's just call her the beautiful aunt of the coaching profession. And she's sort of one of the first life coaches to make life coaching a legitimate profession, to be on Oprah, to kind of get coaching out into the world as a thing that people do. And she was saying that when she first tried to describe what coaching was, she would say to people, "I'm like a business partner whose only agenda is your success within the business." I thought that was, that one was kind of neat. And we were both talking about how we've played with so many different ways of talking about the role of a coach. And the one she settled on and went with for a long time was personal trainer for the soul, which I thought was a nice turn of phrase. But for me, I've always felt that we're in the wonderful life business. That our job is to help our clients have more wonderful lives. Now, chances are that is going to involve a degree of success at work. Chances are that's going to involve a degree of a loving home life, whatever form that loving home life takes. Chances are that's going to involve a sense of ease and happiness and well-being. Chances are that's going to involve some kind of a personal spiritual connection. But what it looks like will be different. The form it takes will be different for every client, and in fact, will often transform as you work with your client. Now, what sets apart the kind of coaching that I talk about, the kind of coaching I do, the kind of coaching I teach on Super Coach Academy, is that it is based on three fundamental principles. And the three fundamental principles are not something that I made up. It's not even something that Sid Banks, who was the first person to articulate them, made up. They're just the three kind of forces at play when human beings try to do stuff. They're like the three things we've got going for us and the three things that at times we're up against. And understanding what you've got going for you and what you're up against is a huge key to being successful. If you were put into an arena where you had never played, the first thing that you would probably want to know is, well, what's the objective of the game? Okay, am I here to slaughter the lion? Am I here to just last for as long as I can? Am I here to outrun somebody else so the lion can get somebody? Like, what's the goal of the game? Right? Now, the second thing that you'd probably want to know is what's the equipment that I've got? Like, what do I have to use in the arena? And then the third question you'd want is, what are the rules? Like, what am I not allowed to do? And from that, you would do your best. Well, most clients I've had over the last 26 years aren't clear at the beginning what the point of the game is. They're just playing. It's like they woke up and they're in a game and it's like, oh, okay, let's make more money and do more stuff. And they've never slowed it down. They've never stepped back to really look like, well, why are we here? Like, what's the point? They certainly have no understanding of the equipment, or they have a very limited or superstitious understanding of how the mind works and what we're up against. So very few people. Now, it has changed over the last 5 years as my books have gone out, other people's books have gone out, and these principles have been shared more widely in the world. But it's very seldom that somebody will come to me and go, oh, I totally get the equipment. I've got this extraordinary responsive intelligence that I can aim in any direction, and it's going to bring me insight, and it's going to bring me wisdom, and it's going to help me, and it's going to solve problems, and it's going to recreate and reorient the world that I'm walking in to make it easier to walk through it. And I've also got this incredible creative potential that's always on and is creating my experience moment by moment. And the system is beautifully set up so that I get an uncomfortable feeling when my thinking is not aligned, when it's kind of going off. And then when it's on point, when the thinking that's coming through is relevant to what I'm up to, well, I get a beautiful feeling. So I've got a really easy navigational system that I can use as I move forward. And then I have this gift of consciousness, like a universal alarm clock that will keep waking me up when I get lost in the game. It will keep bringing me back to the present moment, and it will keep delivering me what I need as I need it. Like, the truth is, people who really see that, if they hire you, they're hiring you just as insight catalysts, right? That's one of the things we can do. One of the great advantages we have as coaches is we're not our clients, which means we're not stuck in their thinking. We're not stuck in the world they make up. We're not operating necessarily by the rules they've taken on as the real rules of the game. We're not stuck with their givens. We're not trapped by their limited sense of possibility. And so even when somebody does have a really solid grounding in the equipment and how it works, there's still an incredible value in being able to talk with another human being and look together in a direction and unleash that creative mind, that creative intelligence through two people or five people or 20 people, depending on the size of team that you might be working with, your client might be working with, through an entire company, through an entire community. So for me, that's why this work is meaningful, because of the size, the scope, the scale of the difference it can make, not only to individuals, but to teams, to companies, to communities, and to the world. And today's theme, right? The word of the day is insight. And insight, the reason that I start with insight and that the live masterclasses, the 5-day intensives, the first one I've called insight, is because insight is the mechanism of transformation. Like, you can get all the information in the world, you can get all the good ideas in the world, but until you get it, until you see it, it's just information. And you can practice it, and you can try and develop skills around it, and you can do things to remind yourself of it. But once you get it, it's yours. Now it just becomes part of the ground that you walk on, right? That's why we call it grounding. Is, you know, what we see insightfully is the ground that we walk on. It's the foundation that we build our world on, that we build our business on, that we build our relationships on, that we build every form we have in our life is built on the insight that we've had, on what we have seen insightfully. So you'll sometimes hear the expression, the penny drop. Those of you who, I recognize some faces from the 3PGC conference this weekend. George Prensky talked about the penny drop. Well, I've got to be honest, I've heard George talk about the penny drop for years, and I was like, is he talking about like one of those old coin things where you drop the penny and it kind of makes its way down and you wonder which slot it's going to go into? And then I was thinking, oh no, I think it's like penny for a gumball. Like, I don't know how much a gumball costs these days, but when I was a kid, you could put a penny in a gumball machine and you could turn it and turn it and turn it, but nothing happened until the penny dropped. You clicked it around and then the penny dropped into the machine and then the gumball came out. Right? Well, that's us. We get an idea and we turn it and turn it around in our mind. But it's not until the penny drops that we get the gumball. It's not until it clicks in that we know what to do. And everybody's really good when they know what to do. Everybody does really well once the penny drops. And yet most people are so used to plowing ahead without knowing what they're really doing that it's just kind of considered collateral damage, everything that goes wrong along the way. You know, I was talking with Don Donovan, who was the CEO of a huge aerospace company, and then studied the three principles and brought it into over 6,000 of his employees and turned the company from a multi-million dollar company to a multi-billion dollar company. And one of the things that he said was a fundamental shift in how they did business is they learned not to move forward when they didn't know what they were doing. Now you'd think, right, aerospace company, rocket scientists, literally rocket scientists, that they would know better than to try and build their systems when they were lost, when they were confused. Their cost of waste. So in a manufacturing business, my dad was in a manufacturing business, and you know there's a cost of quality, they'll more often call it, which is how much money gets spent on stuff that has to get thrown out because the quality is not up to standard. Their cost of quality was over 40%. That means that hundreds of millions of dollars were being thrown out simply because it was like, well, let's just get it done. Right? Because they didn't wait for the penny to drop. They didn't see how important that was. They didn't realize that without insight, you're flying blind. And they didn't realize how close at hand insight always is. They didn't realize that it's not some mythical thing. It's how the mind is designed to work. We get out of our own way and something new comes through. We look in a direction and fresh ideas about that direction start to come to mind. And it's beyond that. We look in a direction and we start to see things in that direction that we'd swear weren't there before. So another way of thinking about the difference between, insight is not an explanation for things, right? There's a sort of I think it comes from Freud, but a psychiatry version of insight. Ah, yes, I have now great insights into my childhood from my father. He did, right? That's an explanation. That's a theory, right? Insight is not data, though it could come from data. You might get more data about the situation you're in, the goal you're up to, the finances that you're dealing with, and that may lead to insight. But insight is the penny drop. Insight is the moment of seeing. Insight is when you get the joke. Not you've had the joke explained to you and you understand why it is very funny, right? My one of my favorite cartoons as a kid was Doonesbury. And there's a character in Doonesbury named Duke who was made ambassador to China. And he fancied himself a bit of a great guy. And his translator, Honey, would translate for him. And he was giving a talk, his first talk as ambassador to China. And he started to go, okay, a rabbi, a priest, and a hooker walk into a bar. And the translator goes, the ambassador is about to make a joke. He then goes on to make the joke about whatever it is. I actually don't remember the original joke. And the translator goes, he has now made the joke and will expect you to laugh raucously. And the audience roars with laughter and the ambassador carries on with his speech, right? That's sort of difference between getting the joke where it's just funny. You just get it, right? You're done. and trying to understand the joke is what we're up against when we try to understand what's going on and figure out what's going on and work out what to do, as opposed to waiting to know. Because when we know, we know. And when we're clear, it's easy. Another metaphor I sometimes use is it's the difference between catching a cold and faking the symptoms. Right? A lot of times we don't really get what's going on, but we fake it. And we think, well, if I act like I do, then everything will be fine. And, you know, achoo! We kind of try to act like we get it. But you know, the difference between having a cold and pretending to have a cold is completely different. But in this case, we're getting infected with success. We're getting infected with happiness. We're getting infected. The cold is the good stuff. And that's a completely different experience of life than pretending, than putting a happy face on, than trying to think happy thoughts. Right? You don't have to do that when you're actually happy. You don't have to fake it when you actually know what to do. And that's the gift of insight. That is what insight offers us, is the knowing. And it's incredibly close at hand. Right? Once you start to see the value of insight, once you start to get a taste of, and you already have it, by the way, you can look in your own life and you can think of times where you just kind of knew what to do and how easy it was to move forward from that place. And then think of the times where you don't really know and you don't really know, but you just think, oh, I got to work, and you kind of plow on, and just how awkward and uncomfortable and how much extra work you wind up creating to clean up the mess you made plowing on when you had no idea what you were doing. And you start to see the value of insight. And then to recognize that it's as simple as an insight will always come into a quiet mind. We could even call it a distracted mind in a way, because just a mind that's not actively thinking about things. So that's why insights often happen when we're driving. They often happen in the shower. I actually used to think this was an apocryphal story. George Pransky told me it was actually true, that he was teaching at a company and he was talking about insight and how, you know, he shared, there's a study that's been around for a while that people get their best ideas in the shower. And, you know, George was talking about this, and after the talk, somebody came up to him and said, well, so, you know, how often should my people shower? Right? We mistake the context in which we get insight for the way that it comes about. Insight's natural. We're seeing new things all the time. And in fact, the payoff, one of the payoffs of looking in this direction and beginning to do whatever it is that you do with a deeper understanding of how the mind works, is you begin to live insightfully. So it's not so much, I have an insight and I've written the insight on a stone tablet and now I try and do what it says on the stone tablet. We can live more and more of the time insightfully in an insight-friendly state of mind, where new thoughts and new ideas are coming to us as we need them. One of my clients described it as a river of insights. He says, one of the things I love about our sessions is whatever we talk about, after we talk, I have a river of insights into whatever it is I've been thinking about. That's a natural use of the mind that gets covered over by the noise of how we habitually use it, which is to fill it up with a lot of thinking about what's wrong with us, what's wrong with everybody else, why we're never going to quite make it, and why it really matters that we do. So what I'd like to do is get off my soapbox, and I'd like to take a few questions. If you guys have any questions about anything I've talked about so far, and then we'll move into a coaching session or two. So I think the best way to do this, because we have multiple screens, is there is a button that says, Oh, come on. Lynn, you might need to help me out here.
Yeah, if you could enter, so hover over the bottom of your screen and go to participants. And then if you're there, if you all kind of manage yourself, there's a little digital button that says raise hand, and it will raise me a little digital hand so I will be able to see you all and bring you on.
Your little digital hands.
Little digital hand, I'll be able
little
to
little digital hands, very nice. What do you think? Have I stunned them into submission?
Yeah, I think you. Oh, no, we have. And I'm going to bring on, hold on a sec, Visionaries. I don't actually know your name, so I'm going to unmute you and bring you on. Can you hear us?
Yes.
Wonderful.
My name's Andrew.
Hey, Andrew.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going well.
So my question is, I'm a coach. I've been a coach for about 26 years, and I work primarily with businesses. How do you consistently help your clients create that river of insight that you're talking about? Help them quiet the mind and open that field of insight for them?
Well, part of it, and I'm going to be talking about this throughout the 5 days, part of it is that as you get quieter in yourself, mm-hmm. it becomes like a tuning fork. So I call it in the academy, transformative presence. Mm. That as we go deeper in ourselves, we start to naturally draw people to that place in themselves. So I worked with a Zen master for a while. I actually coached a Zen master, but it was kind of fun. And one of the things that he said to me, because I had a Zen master in the room. I got to ask him questions. And I asked him about this idea of transmission. So in Zen, those of you who don't know it, the idea is that the master can transmit Dharma to the student. And it always sounds like this very mystical, energetic, mind meld, Vulcan, Spock thing. But he said, there is something that is awake in me that is asleep in most people. And when they're around me, it wakes up in them a bit. And then it goes back to sleep. And in his tradition, through practices and meditation and mindfulness and things like that, they try and wake that thing up. But a lot of it is just sitting with the guru, right? And he says, at a certain point, that which is awake in me is also awake in them. And at that point, transmission is said to have taken place, although nothing ever actually passed from me to them. It's like that without the Zen stuff.
Right.
That as we find that aliveness in us, as we find that connection to this deeper mind and this deeper intelligence in us, it is naturally awakened in our clients. Now, what I am also very clear to tell people is I can't teach you how to do that because there is no doing in that. It is a natural consequence of learning what you learn and getting more insight. So I can point somebody to it. I can, and often do, tell them to shut up, because that's usually the problem.
Right.
I mean, if you've been doing this 26 years, you know that. They just don't shut up in their head, outside their head. Like, you know, there's no room for fresh thought to come in. I can help them gain an appreciation for insight and for how much easier it is to live insightfully than the way they've been trying to do it. But ultimately, a lot of it is they just settle down and insight comes through because insight is natural.
Thank you.
Cool. Thank you. We had a question from Lucy as well, Lynn.
Yeah, no, I'm bringing on Lucy now. Go ahead, Lucy.
Hello, everybody. Hello, dear Michael. I would like to ask you about what would be, I mean, you have obviously a lot of experience and you have achieved a lot. And what would you advise as to the best three questions for when we meet our client for the first time? Because everybody is at a different state, different mind of a different level of their consciousness, and etc. So, but what would be the three questions that we really want to ask our client before we start working?
I'm trying so hard not to give the facetious answer, which is cash or charge. I failed, didn't I? It came out. I would say that here's a generic piece of advice about question asking. Ask the question you'd like the answer to, and then you'll never go wrong. So what do you want to know about them? You know, what would be helpful for you to know? You know, it's helpful to know a little bit about them in my mind, but I don't necessarily need to know that much about them before we start. Now, somebody else might really like to know more about them before they start. I like to know enough that I feel like we've got a rapport and we can move on. I might ask them how they heard about me, right? Like what it is that drew them to me. Why are they there? Like, why are they with me instead of with somebody else? And I'll also ask them why they're there generally. Like, you know, I like miracles. You know, there's Sid Banks said at a certain point that I just heard this yesterday, but I loved it. That if you're not, you know, if your clients aren't experiencing miracles, then you're doing it wrong, right? So I might ask them, well, what would the miracle be as a result of our work together? Like, you know, if a miracle happened, how would we know? What would be different? Often, to be honest, the question I ask most is, what would be great? You know, we've got 5 minutes, we've got an hour, we've got a year. What would be great? And we just build from there. But the reason I ask those questions are they're the ones I want the answer to. And if I wanted an answer to different questions, I'd ask those questions instead. Does that make sense?
Yes, very much. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Lucy.
Thank you, Lucy. Right, next up we've got Alex, and then I'll bring on Robert after that. Go ahead, Alex.
Hi, how are you, Michael? How are you, everybody?
I'm very well.
I have a question. When we're doing the three principles, the one about thought, it really works for me when I'm not in the big distress. When I'm in big distress or a situation that is really, really painful, or even when I try to imagine an extreme situation like a Holocaust situation, even though learning about Viktor Frankl and all that type of thing, how do you actually apply that your thought becomes the best available thought when everything is going really, really intensely bad?
Well, it's a tricky question for a couple of reasons. Not that I'm not going to try to answer it, but the first reason it's a tricky question is it makes it sound like things can go badly without my thought. Like things can go badly or well, and then I think about them. Things are things. And if I think about them one way, they'll seem to be going badly. And if I think about them differently, they'll seem to be neutral. And if I think about them differently, they'll seem to be going well. So in a way, if I think that them going well or badly is property of the universe and not a property of my own thinking, then I've lost before I've started. I've lost my leverage because I'm already in a world that I think is real beyond my thinking. And so I'm limited in my ways to respond to it. See, what we're actually pointing to with the principles is that we are creating the world. The mind is a projector, not a camera. It's a paintbrush. And therefore, if we're already experiencing something as awful, that's the painting. That's not the canvas. And so to be able to recognize that and go back to the blank canvas and paint again, to go back to the blank screen and let a different movie come through, that's where we start to have choice. That's where we start to have possibility. Now, I've never seen it, but I've been told the movie Life is Beautiful does a great job of portraying that in the context of the Holocaust, where he just didn't play and created a completely different reality that they lived inside of. Now, So that's one piece, right? The second piece that makes it a tricky question to answer is when I imagine something awful like the Holocaust, well, what thought feeling tells us is we feel our thinking. So if I'm thinking about the Holocaust and I'm probably thinking about it in a pretty miserable way, I'm going to feel like shit. And I'm going to feel limited in my responsiveness. I'm going to feel like, I don't know what to do. I'm going to be up in my head. I'm going to be busy-minded, and I'm going to be kind of at my worst. Now, I can tell you, if you found yourself in an actual Holocaust, you would be amazed at how resourceful you were. Because everybody I've met who's found themselves in an actual crisis, I'm not saying nobody freezes, but the norm is that people do extraordinarily well until the crisis has passed, and then they start thinking about it and fall apart, right? So that's the second reason that's a tricky question to ask. Now, here's the closest thing you're going to get to an answer. And I'm trying, right? I heard something beautiful over the weekend at the conference, which is that the illusion in life is not our circumstances. Our circumstances are not illusory. The illusion is that our circumstances can create a feeling in us. So I'm not saying, hey, but for your thinking, people don't die. Hey, but for your thinking, cats don't fall off roofs. Hey, but for your thinking, there's no Holocaust. I'm saying cats and death and Holocausts don't come with a feeling. And when you see that more cleanly, you are able to stay with yourself. You're able to maintain your bearings. You're able to show up insightfully in that situation. And you're able to do as well as any human being could possibly do in those circumstances. And I don't think you can ask for more than that, to be at your best when it really counts. I think that's the power of coaching, is to help people be at their best more of the time when it really matters. Does that make sense, Alex?
Absolutely. Thank you so much. It was a big insight.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's take one more for now, Lynn, and then I'm going to bring somebody on for some coaching.
Robert, so I'll bring him on now. Go ahead, Robert.
I think you're muted, Rob. Oh, there you are.
Yeah, I was unmuted. So here's my question. I have a successful coaching business in a financial services niche, and it has been 100% technique. I've never met an A through Z blueprint or an 8 essential keys that I didn't absolutely love and want to go out and teach. And now I am transitioning to more of an inside-out understanding. And thankfully, the opportunity to bring it up in conversations happens a lot. But I'm interested in doing more of a marketing campaign. I am writing a book and doing other things. But just as you made the transition from more of an outside in to an inside out, how did you begin to introduce that into a conversation with old clients and then with the new clients that you met? And what
really badly.
I'm sorry?
I did it really badly. I did. I mean, I took like 3 years and it was awkward. And there's actually, funnily enough, my brother-in-law told me he watched last night. There's a talk online that I gave at Tikkun in 2011 about that transition. So if you're interested in the actual details of my pathetic attempts at integrating these two things, you can find them there. But let me perhaps answer a more useful question. How might you do it in a way that is not so crappy? The thing that everyone told me, but I didn't see insightfully, so it didn't help, is that this understanding of how the mind works is fundamentally different than 98% of what other people are doing, even if they say it's about thought or they call it, or the word mind and consciousness appear in it, or they say it's inside out. we are actually, I am actually saying, and anyone who has seen this would it is irrefutable as the color of the sky when you go outside, that there it is 100% of our experience is created by thought in the moment. No exceptions. And that 100% of your experience is fully explained by that. Now, the difference in my life between when I thought it was 99% inside out and when I actually said, oh, fuck it, I'm just going to assume I'm wrong about the 1% that still looks outside in, right? Which is what I did. And then quite to my surprise, what I found out a bunch of other early adopters had done back in the 70s, where they got to the point where they gone, well, I've been wrong about everything else, so I'm probably wrong about everything, right? It suddenly gets quite simple because you don't need all these blueprints. Now, you might, for practical things, I'm not suggesting that, you know, it might not be useful to have an A to Z in financial planning. I have no idea. But foundationally, you get to the point, and this has been an experience I've talked to a lot of people about, you get to a point where you just can't lie anymore. You can't pretend that it still looks to you the way it used to. And it gets easier then because you stop trying to. So I'll give you a very specific story that it might be helpful. When I was started to see this in 2009, I taught a program called Financially Fearless with my friend Steve Chandler. And George Pransky came to me and said, what are you doing? Because he read the blurb and it didn't sound very principally to him. And I explained to him, I said, well, I'm going to work with people on seeing that money cannot create their experience. So they can't actually have fear about money because it doesn't work that way. And Steve's going to come at it from the outside in and show them how to make money so they don't have to be scared of it. Now, I hear that now and I go, what the fuck? Like that doesn't even make sense. But at the time, it really looked to me like that made sense. And George pushed me on it for a little while and then he saw, oh, you really think that it matters. You really think the bank balance matters. And basically, that was the turning point where he said, you know what, then you should do this course. So you don't have to teach beyond your pay grade. You don't have to make yourself, oh, I'm pure in my... Stay with what you see. Like, that is your strength. If you can always come from your insight, your seeing, even if you think it's not enough, even if you think it's, well, I know that ultimately I'll think this, you will be so much more powerful simply for being you and being real than you will be by trying to do it the way you think is the right way. Does that make sense?
Yes, it makes sense. And I have a shower coming up after this, so hopefully it'll make more sense even than it does right now. Thank you. Yes. Very helpful.
Excellent. Brilliant, Robert. Enjoy your shower. Lynn, can you see if Rao is here? Rao Garamella. He's on my...
I am looking, unless he is on the phone, because we have a whole heap of people who are on the phone.
Okay.
So, no, I'm not seeing the name.
Okay. Well, if we don't have Rao, how about Sue Hills?
We do have Sue. Dun, 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 dun. Sue, I'm going to unmute you and bring you on. Can you hear Sue? Let me see if I can find Sue on screen. She is unmuted, so.
Sue Hills going once.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Ah, yes. Hey, there you are.
Hi.
Yeah, be very careful about the share screen feature. I mean, as it happened, she wasn't doing anything that any of us would be embarrassed by, but just be aware, there is a button. You don't want to press it. What? So on you know, I've obviously read what you wrote, but just... What would be great? We got a little bit of time to explore whatever you'd like to explore. What would you love to explore?
Yeah. Firstly, you just reminded me when you were talking about Play-Doh, and I had an amazing insight from your book when I was reading The Space Within, and I was reading the chapter or a piece about Play-Doh, and you could just roll it up and start again. Mm-hmm. And I was running a business consultancy at the time, and I just stopped. I put the book down, and I just thought, I don't want to do this anymore. And literally, I rolled the Play-Doh up and stopped it almost immediately. And that was just amazing. I just had to share that. It was just absolutely amazing. Something really resonated deeply.
And well, let me just flag that, Sue, one thing about that, which is to not have to be scared of our own creations is what frees us up to create.
Yeah.
Like if I'm not worried, yeah, I'm going to create something and then I'll be stuck with it.
Yeah.
Well, then you're free to just try stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, no, definitely. It was just really, really quite amazing.
Yeah.
And it was easy to, I think you said again earlier, it was easy to let go. Once I made that decision, it was really gone.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. So what would be great?
I've read your books. I have read lots of Sid Banks' books, and as I read them, I really feel peaceful. I love his Second Chance and your Space Within, and it all, that word makes sense. And then I go about my life, and I forget, and suddenly I find before any time's passed, I'm reacting again to outside in. I run a care business, and I might have to pay the staff, and I'm worried about cash flow, and I get all the anxiety, and I just completely forget. And it's, how do you maintain that sense of peace? You know, because inside, I keep using that word, makes sense. Inside, it makes sense to me more than anything else that I've read. I used to do NLP as well, and I'm a mental health practitioner, and so I've sort of done all the outside in stuff. But I can't. It's just so challenging for me to hang on to it.
Well, as is often the case, the problem's in the formulation of the question. Right? So here's how I heard what you said. There's this me named Sue, and there's this piece over here, and then there's this world out there. And I'm trying to hold on to this with one hand while handling the world with my other. And sometimes the world needs both my hands and I have to put that down. And then I go, oh crap, I miss it. And then I put the world down so I can grab that again. Right? Yeah. Well, you want the good news or the bad news?
Both.
Okay. So the bad news is, the world often requires both your hands if you're going to do anything worthwhile in it. The good news is the peace of mind isn't separate and you don't have to hang on to it. It's a phrase that we use, peace of mind, in an attempt to describe what it feels like to be alive without too much self-consciousness. And without thinking about ourselves and our plight too much. So essentially, if I have both hands free to deal with my life now, to deal with my business, I'm going to do better in my business. Knowing that at times I am going to get caught up in a bunch of thinking about me and my plight and what's wrong. And I am going to feel uncomfortable for a little bit. And that the second, the millisecond, the smaller unit of time that I don't know what you call that's smaller than a millisecond, that I drop out of that thinking, I'm going to be right back in the peace, still with both hands on the world, still with both hands in my business, but with a freedom of mind, because I don't need to hold on to peace of mind over here as I'm trying to deal with the world over there. Then the world stops being a distraction. Right? Your job stops harshing your mellow. It's a very California expression. Man, you're harshing my mellow. it's like, you know, I would love business, but all these people, they want stuff and they're hushing my mellow. It's like, no, they can't. All that ever happens is I get caught up here and I lose touch with it. And then I drop out of this and it's right back. And the whole time I can keep both hands on the wheel, both hands on my business, both hands on whatever it is I'm trying to create. And I'm just going to do better across the board every time. Tell me what you hear in that.
That even if I've got both of my hands in my business, I still have that special peace of mind, but it never goes away. Originally I was talking as if there were different parts of me. But now that even when I'm experience that outside in anxiety, I'm still okay. I just maybe in that moment have forgotten that.
Yeah. And what's beautiful is you don't even have to remind yourself of it. Because have you noticed how you always come back to it?
Yeah. Yes, I do.
Yeah. Yes. That's consciousness. That's built into the system. The alarm clock is built into the system. So you don't have to worry about falling asleep.
Yeah, I do. I think sometimes I just, when I read books and I feel there's a sense of frustration, and I know that doesn't help. I think, why can't I go through living life with all these wonderful insights and peaceful and stop worrying about stuff?
So if we lived in the feeling of our thinking and somebody was thinking, oh my God, why am I such a loser? Why does everybody else get this? Why am I never going to get this? I wonder if I'm ever going to get this. What kind of feeling state do you think they would wind up in?
Just more of the same, very anxious. Yeah.
Right. And it's just seeing, and look, it's a lifelong game, right? We can see deeper and deeper and deeper. Oh, this is that thought thing again. Oh, this is that thought thing again. And in fact, the feeling is part of the alarm clock mechanism.
Yes, yeah.
Right? It's like, oh man, I feel like shit. I must be thinking. I must be overthinking things. But I don't have to do it. Like, it's so well made. Like, we are so well made. It's just that we put so much interference into the system that, you know, because we think we've got to do it, that it doesn't work as efficiently as it's designed to.
Yeah.
Well, beautiful. Thank you, Sue. And let's see, Lynn, another person, who would I star for Monday? How about TiVo?
Let me have a check. TiVo.
Just everybody here. There.
I know. Because people's names are different on Zoom, see? Who else have you got?
Let's see. I also had on my today list Irina.
Irina. Let me see.
Okay, so it would definitely be helpful, guys, if you hear your name called.
Yeah, just unmute yourself and bring you on. Different names are,
you
know, yeah.
Obviously, when we've done this a few more times, we'll get used to what you look like and where you are. Okay, let's see. I'll go one more try, and then if not, we'll just go take a last couple of questions.
Yeah.
Carrie Masuto.
Who? Which one?
Carrie,
yeah. No, she's definitely here. Let me see, Carrie. Oh, yep. Yeah. Unmuting Carrie, go ahead.
Hi there.
Hey, Carrie.
Wow, okay, I wasn't expecting to get called, so this is...
Are you like a standing desk? Or?
Yeah, I am, and I'm like on a, you know, balance.
No, I was going to say, I kind of... All right, yeah. I feel like I need to... Okay, we got this, Carrie.
Sorry, right. I'll try to like okay, settle right. down a little here.
So what would be great?
I think what would be great for me is that I'm just want to get into coaching, and it's something that I've wanted to get into for several years now. And I'm a medical doctor, and the thing that I've always wanted, the reason I got into that is because I wanted to help people. And when I realized that that wasn't really the way that I think I can truly help people. I've wanted to transition into more of a coaching thing, but I very much have that mindset of you need to know more, you need to get more training, more certifications, more learning, you know, and I get into like this analysis paralysis. Mm-hmm. And I just got exposed to your stuff about a month ago. Mm-hmm. And it like so strongly resonated. And I think it's, you know, how do I keep getting out of that super logic, scientific, like research, study, evidence, yeah, mind, and into like, you know, how to help people and to make that transition and have the confidence to make that transition.
Okay. So look, one of the things that people love or hate about my trainings, the Supercoach Academy particularly, is you have to actually go out and coach people. Like, that is part of the training. That's not a random certification requirement. That's actually based on, I live next door to a family. They actually just moved. And the dad was a social worker in Germany. And he explained to me their training, which was that they went out into the field for the first 3 months and lived in housing estates where there were problems and then would take classes, but they had to live with a family who was at risk. And then they would come and take classes. And so they kind of had this, boy, I'm in it and I'm learning about it. I'm in it and I'm learning about it. Then after they'd had a year of that, they did full-time classes for a year. And then the last part was three quarters of the time in the field with a little bit of classroom. And it was like that informed how I developed my training, because that made perfect sense. You actually have to know what you're talking about for the words to have meaning, right? You actually have to have the experience of a client looking at you blankly while you spout what you think is brilliance, or look at you with so much need in their eyes and feel helpless because you don't know what to say to them, or be in a situation where you think, my God, this person is more successful than me. They're, you know, make more money than me. They're better looking than I am. How am I going to help them? You have to be in all of those situations in order to start to see the universality of this. So that's why for me, this is intense. Like, look, I'm doing this because I want to find the right people to come on it. Right? And the right people to come on it are up for intense. They're up for, we're going in at the deep end. They're up for, there are going to be times where you don't know enough and you're flying blind and you're going to fuck up. Now, as it happens, life coaching is not brain surgery. And fucking up does not have the consequences that brain surgery would. I do not necessarily want my brain surgeon going, I started a course yesterday. Can I do the operation? Right? But in this, it is okay. Worst case, you're going to have a nice conversation with somebody. Best case, miracles happen. So that's the only way I know to do it. It doesn't work as well to just go out and coach and coach and coach until you've got some grounding and a place to check in. It doesn't do great to just sit there for 6 months and take a bunch of input in and go, oh my God, this is great, and then leave and think, now I have to figure out how to do it. It's doing both at the same time, in my experience, that brings about the most rapid and impactful coaching. And that's why we do it the way we do it.
Yeah, so I just had an insight. That
it's an occupational hazard. You'll get used to that.
Yeah. Right. That's exactly how I trained to become a doctor. Mm-hmm. You know, how many people that I interacted with and I cared for as a medical student when I was scared shitless and I didn't mm-hmm. really know what I was doing, but you walked into the room and, you know, a lot of what I did was my intuition of what are the right questions to ask and how can I help in this situation. And I learned the medical stuff while I learned how to do the being a doctor thing, and you grow together with that, and then, you know, it just builds and builds, and you get more and more confidence, and you can help more and more, and get more and more.
Right, and we're like, there. Like,
oh my
that's why you do it that way, because we're there, so that if you do inadvertently put the wrong medication into the patient, we can go, no, and fix it. Like, you know, that
right.
is the point.
Right, exactly.
That's why we've got the supervision. That's why we've got the weekly calls. That's why we've got, like, that is exactly the model.
Oh, okay, good. It was like, oh, duh. Yeah,
that's how you learn the
other way.
That is one of the two universal ways you know your client has insight. One is, this was actually a friend of mine called this, it flathead coaching, because people are always going, oh!
Yeah.
Right? You know, that's one kind of insight. And then every now and again, you do get the Moses coming down with the stone tablets insight. We go, oh my God. You know, you'll get a few of those as well. But thank you, Karen.
Awesome. Thank you.
Brilliant. Well, thank you, gang. We're at the end of our time for today. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about impact. Again, if you haven't, I've got a bunch of people down for coaching, but if you would like to get in and your what you want coaching on is more interesting than theirs, I'll pick you. and if you want to learn more about the Academy, what's the way for them if they're kind of like, yeah, I want to do this or I want to ask questions?
They can email Annette probably, or email me, because I'm obviously just about to get on a plane, so I might not be around for a couple of hours. So they can email me lynne@michaelneal.org.
Brilliant.
And if you give me a day to get back home, I will get back in touch with you.
Tell you what, guys, give her a day and a half.
Yeah, a day and a half to get back home.
All right, lovely. I'll see you all tomorrow. Thank you for coming. Bye.